There's a long way to go. I'm Pam Puzo, Fox News. That's the feeling of President Biden, who believes Washington needs to do more to ease the economic suffering brought on by the pandemic.
Employers added just 266,000 new jobs in April, less than the month before, far fewer than economists predicted.
We knew this wouldn't be a sprint. It'd be a marathon.
President Biden says the American Rescue Plan, the nearly $2 trillion coronavirus relief measure, is designed to help over the course of a year. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen says there will be bumps in restarting a pre-pandemic economy,
in which there are a lot of supply bottlenecks.
Some Republicans argue the additional $300 a week unemployment benefit included in coronavirus relief is to blame for a shortage of workers who don't have incentive to return to work.
Fox's Jared Halpern. Minor damage and no casualties in Iraq following a drone strike on a military base housing U.S. forces. That's according to the U.S.-led coalition. There's been no claim of responsibility, but the U.S. has blamed Iran-backed militia groups for previous attacks. More than 200 Palestinians are said to be hurt after overnight clashes with Israeli police at the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. Tensions ignited last month at the start of the Islamic holy month of Ramadan after police imposed restrictions at a popular gathering place. At the ballpark, another no-hitter.
Ground ball, Farmer, wizardry from Wade Miley, a no-hitter. And baseball history.
Call courtesy of Bally Sports Ohio. Wade Miley gets Jordan Luplow to ground out to short to lock up the Cincinnati Reds' first no-hitter since 2013 as they defeat the Cleveland Indians Friday night 3-0.
Fox's Matt Napolitano. America's listening to Fox News. His lawyers called it justified, but a jury in Alabama has convicted a police officer who killed a man who was armed and suicidal.
A Huntsville police officer testified against Officer William Darby, saying she was de-escalating the situation with Jeff Parker 3 years ago. Parker had called police to say he was armed and wanted to kill himself. Body camera footage showed Darby killed Parker within 11 seconds of entering the house after yelling at him to drop his weapon. Madison County's chief trial attorney told jurors that Darby murdered an innocent man who needed help. Darby's attorney says he believed that Parker was a threat to the officers. After the verdict was announced, the police chief said in a statement that they were in the first stages of shock. Darby's attorney said the jury got it wrong and that they will appeal. Jessica Rosenthal, Fox News.
New charges against the four former police officers in Minneapolis tied to the death of George Floyd.
These new charges come from the Department of Justice's civil rights investigation into George Floyd's death. And federal prosecutors are making the case that Derek Chauvin, Alexander King, Thomas Lane, and Tu Tao used their positions as police officers to deprive Mr. Floyd of his constitutional rights.
Fox's Garrett Tenney, former officer Derek Chauvin, who was convicted on state charges of murder and manslaughter, is asking for a new trial. The other three are set to be tried in August. Will the water be smooth or choppy? Cruise lines are gearing up for trial voyages to determine whether ships can sail safely during a pandemic. Frank Del Rio is the CEO of Norwegian Cruise Lines.
There is no good reason to prevent us from cruising. Every other transportation venue, entertainment venue, hospitality venue is open around the country, and we're still shut down after 15 months.
Norwegian is threatening to keep its ships out of Florida due to legislation banning businesses from requiring customers to show proof of vaccination. I'm Pam Puzo, Fox News.
On the outer loop of the Beltway at 202 Landover Road, look out for some construction along the two left lanes, just causing a very brief delay there. And on the outer loop at the off-ramp to go westbound on 66, only the left lane gets by. The right lane is blocked through that long-term work zone. You should find that the road work on 66 eastbound between 123 and the Vienna Metro and westbound between 123 and Fair Oaks should be picked up and all of the ramps should be reopened. Now from GarageJoyPair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
A few scattered showers will be possible early on this morning, but we will see a little bit of sunshine breaking through midday. High temperatures today should reach the mid-60s. Some isolated showers will be possible through the afternoon hours, mainly north of D.C. Later on tonight, temperatures dip into the 40s through the region. Cool start to Mother's Day. Mother's Day, mostly cloudy skies. Some highly isolated showers, the best chance north and west. High temperatures in the mid-60s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Lee at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
Now, the Saturday morning update.
105.9 FM, WMAL. Good morning. It is the Saturday morning update for Mother's Day weekend, and a very happy Mother's Day and Grandmother's Day. I hope that you have a good one this weekend, and maybe we'll have some decent weather by tomorrow. A little gray and chilly out there this morning in the Washington area. You know, it's kind of interesting. In the Trump administration, you could have a dismal jobs report on a Friday morning, and by lunchtime, we would have been on to the next story. And we just would have moved on because Trump would have either said something, done something, or the media would have just attacked him for something else. And we would have forgotten the jobs by 2 in the afternoon. However, a little slower pace in the Biden administration. So we now have what's going to be almost a 36-hour news cycle on the jobs report. And it's well worth at least 36 hours because it was so dismal. Now, the April jobs report was released yesterday, and it shows that 266,000 jobs were added last month. Expectations from the economists were somewhere between 975,000 and 1 million jobs would be added. The president starts on the spin, obviously. I mean, he's got a mess on his hands. He's got to try and put the most positive face on it that he can. So here's kind of a summary of the Biden spin yesterday.
I want to put today's jobs report in perspective. Listening to commentators today, as I was getting dressed, you might think that we should be disappointed. But when we passed the American Rescue Plan, I want to remind everybody, it was designed to help us over the course of a year, not 60 days. And this is progress. And it's a testament to our new strategy of growing this economy from the bottom up and the middle out. And it's a clear testament to why it's so needed. Some critics said that we didn't need the American Rescue Plan, that this economy would just heal itself. Today's report just underscores, in my view, how vital the actions we're taking are.
I don't know how that makes you feel, but here's how it made Pat Toomey feel. He is the Republican senator from Pennsylvania.
Obviously, very disappointing numbers this morning. We're getting a little Orwellian with when it comes to the language we hear from this administration sometimes. I'm hoping this is an anomaly that we see with this disappointing jobs number and that we'll be back on a much more robust path in the coming weeks and months. Systematically paying unemployment benefits that are more than a person makes working doesn't create an environment that's particularly conducive to going back to work.
And there has been a lot of discussion about those unemployment payments and whether it is maybe an incentive for people to stay home. Now, think of a server in a restaurant. Pre-COVID, you'd have a full house in a restaurant. Now, if you've got 25% capacity in a restaurant or even 50%, that's one-fourth or one-half of your tip potential that you had previously. So the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is chiming in on the unemployment benefits. Now, you know, there is a $300 a week federal unemployment benefit. On top of that, most states have state unemployment benefits, although Montana and South Carolina are going to be moving away from it. But at this point, most of the states have unemployment benefits, and you've got your $300 a week from the feds. Well, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce says the disappointing jobs report, quote, makes it clear unemployment payments are keeping people from going back to work, as pressure grows for the federal government to address the widespread reports of labor shortages. So that's what the U.S. Chamber of Commerce says. They know something about business because that is their business. Of course, Republicans have been especially critical of allowing the benefits to continue. The Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell said Thursday the benefits were making it more lucrative for Americans not to work. So you've got that backdrop. And now let's get into some more of President Biden's spin from yesterday. Here's a pipe dream on jobs.
All the economists, including the liberal as well as conservative think tanks, point out we'll create up to 16 million good paying jobs. Not $8 an hour, $12 an hour, $15 an hour, prevailing wage jobs. Wages you can raise a family on.
Yeah, and they predicted that, a million jobs yesterday, and we got 266,000. But to the rescue, climate change equals jobs.
When I think about the threats of hurricanes and global warming and the poor condition of our economy as it relates particularly to infrastructure, I think of one thing. I think of jobs. Jobs. Jobs.
And you heard the president say in our summary there about building the economy from the bottom up and the middle out. I'm not quite sure what that means. Let's give him a further chance to explain what that means.
We can pay for these things. I'm not talking about deficit spending. I'm talking about paying for. I realize I'm getting too wonky here, giving you too much detail. But the point is, what I'm proposing is badly needed and able to be paid for and still grow. Trickle down ain't working very well, man. We got to build from the bottom and up and the middle out. That's how we build America.
And you've heard about the billions and billions of dollars that are in the pork and earmarks. But, of course, the president's never seen an earmark when it comes to infrastructure.
I've never seen a Republican or Democrat road. I just see roads.
Okay, sure. Well, Nancy Pelosi sees it a little differently. She's rather happy and proud of her earmarks.
It is for the good of the community. And we encourage people to have as much community support for a project as possible. And so I'm very proud of it.
Of course you are. All right. At 6:16, we have one of our first scandals of the Biden cabinet, and we'll talk about that in detail next. And it's kind of interesting. It actually goes back pre-inauguration. Pretty interesting story. But that's next. But first, Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
In the district, a portion of 9th Street is closed in both directions between Kennedy Street and Longfellow Street due to utility work that in Northwest. And also in Kensington, a portion of Beach Drive is closed between Connecticut Avenue and Knowles Avenue for social distance recreation this weekend. In Alexandria, watch out for a work zone on 7 East and Westbound near 395. One lane gets by each way on King Street above 395. Now from GarageDroidPair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
A few scattered showers will be possible early on this morning, but we will see a little bit of sunshine breaking through midday. High temperatures today should reach the mid-60s. Some isolated showers will be possible through the afternoon hours, mainly north of D.C. Later on tonight, temperatures dip into the 40s through the region. Cool start to Mother's Day. Mother's Day, mostly cloudy skies. Some highly isolated showers, the best chance north and west. High temperatures in the mid-60s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett, the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
It is a very cool 43 degrees with drizzle in the nation's capital. It's 6:17 on the Saturday morning update on WMAL.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
And it is the Saturday morning update. A very happy Mother's Day weekend to you. I'm Rick Fowler. Remember in the Trump administration, all of the emphasis and the focus on the scandals among the cabinet members? I mean, they were just ripping everybody to shreds when it came to the Trump cabinet. Here's one you're probably not hearing too much about, although it did actually rise to the level of CNN. Oh, my goodness. Must be good. And it actually goes back to pre-inauguration, but that didn't seem to make any difference at that point. Here's what it is if you haven't heard about it. Jennifer Granholm is now the Secretary of Energy. She is a two-term Michigan governor before heading over to energy. Well, she may be about to profit millions of dollars invested stock options in a green company whose board she formerly sat on. And here's how the story goes. Now, this has been reported by Newsmax, other outlets, even CNN got to it. So here's what happens. They do an event, okay, at Proterra. Now, this is the company that we're talking about. There are literally hundreds of electric vehicle manufacturers in the U.S. You've got Detroit's Big Three, of course, GM, Ford, etc. Elon Musk's Tesla. But the president and vice president basically ignore those. They single out Proterra for praise and a virtual tour of their facilities. So not only does Granholm still have the stock options, but the president and the vice president do an event at the company. Huh. Now, Granholm had agreed that if she was confirmed, she would sell off her stock options in Proterra within 180 days of taking office. Now, give me a break. How long does it take to sell stock options? It doesn't take 180 days unless you want to take that 180 days so the value of the stock options can continue to increase, especially when you have the president and the vice president doing an event at Proterra. Well, CNN's Kristen Holmes did a report on Thursday. She even acknowledged it, quote, that Granholm even promoted electric cars as part of the administration's climate push is already ethically questionable, experts say. But Biden and Harris' direct highlighting of Proterra is even more problematic, as it could increase the company's value when it goes public and increase Granholm's profits. Wow. Let's see what happens on this one. You're probably not seeing much or hearing much about it, but it is a mess. The Washington Free Beacon brought it up actually on January 22nd. It was 2 days after Biden was sworn into office. They reported at the time she stood to make as much as a $5 million hit on her stock deal if confirmed as the energy secretary. It gets even better. The Free Beacon also reported that she co-owns, along with her husband, a company called Granholm Mulhern Associates. It provided consulting services to green energy companies. Although it was dissolved when she became energy secretary, the Free Beacon reported that her husband, Daniel Mulhern, reportedly planned to reform it solely under his own name and service its former clients. Well, one Republican had a problem with all of this, Senator John Barrasso. When she came up for confirmation, she voted nay, citing the administration's war on fossil fuel. Last week, Senator John Barrasso of Wyoming asked for an investigation into Granholm's possible conflict of interest. We'll see where that one goes. Jen Psaki, of course, the White House press secretary, got a little bit chatty Cathy on the Axe show. And, of course, that's David Axelrod's program, former big-time member of the Obama administration. And it's interesting when you get a couple of comfortable Democrats together how they can just trash social media, trash anything they want. And here's how they try to explain off the border crisis.
What we had to be focused on, to us, it's like that wasn't really a crisis. It was a huge challenge. But really a big driver was we understand and know the nature of some components of social media and media these days, and we just didn't want to feed into that.
And, you know, there was a big dialogue. You might have heard President Biden a couple of weeks ago, and I was going to play the audio, but I didn't make a big deal of it at the time. The audio was a little muffled, but it was on the White House lawn. He was taking some questions from reporters, and he kind of cut it short, and he said, you know, if I keep taking questions here, I'll get in trouble. And it was kind of a funny, but maybe there's a little more to it than that, and here's how Jen Psaki explained it to David Axelrod.
That is not something we recommend. In fact, a lot of times we say don't take questions. You know, but he's going to do what he wants to do because he's the president of the United States.
So they discourage him from taking questions. Now, in fairness, I'm sure that President Trump's media people would have preferred that he didn't spend 45 minutes every time he was headed to the helicopter and take impromptu questions, because some of those impromptu questions, after he answered them, raised even more questions. So it's kind of standard operating procedure if you're in the press office at the White House that you would prefer not to have the president doing impromptu questions. But when President Biden says, well, I'm going to get in trouble for it, it's not something you would have heard from President Trump. I don't think you would have heard President Trump say that. But That's another time. It's 6:24. It's the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL, and we have got a program lined up for you that includes Jennifer Harper from the Washington Times. We'll be talking with Jim Trusty, our legal counsel, and of course, he's the former chief of the organized crime and gang section at the Department of Justice, so he knows his stuff. John Gizzi will join us later on this morning, the White House correspondent, and he'll have some information on Jen Psaki. We were just talking about Jen Psaki. Her plans are not to stay on after a year. And what does that mean? Speculation already as to a new press secretary. We'll get into that with John Gizzi this morning. If you've been to the grocery store recently and you've noticed shortages on the shelves, you wonder what's going on. Well, Cheryl Atkinson will help figure that out for us, and we'll be asking her that question this morning. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer will join us, and sort of the impact and the magnitude and the dangers of the cartels that are controlling the illegal immigration coming across the border. We'll get into that a little more in depth with Tony this morning, so that's coming up. And also, we'll be talking with KT McFarland. Always a great idea to get a read from KT on the Biden administration and how things are going after her experience in the Trump administration. So it's all on the way. Stay with us here on the Saturday Morning Update. In the news at this hour, the large Chinese rocket that is out of control is set to re-enter Earth's atmosphere this weekend, bringing a final wave of concern before its debris makes impact somewhere on Earth. It's the Long March 5B rocket. It's about 100 feet tall. It weighs 22 tons, expected to enter Earth's atmosphere sometime over the weekend. The rocket's, quote, exact entry point into the Earth's atmosphere can't be pinpointed until within hours of re-entry, according to Mike Howard at the Defense Department. They do say that the 18th Space Control Squadron is providing daily updates on the rocket's location through its Space Track website. The good news in all of this is that debris plunging toward Earth, while unnerving, generally poses very little threat to personal safety, with the amount of water covering the Earth. That minimizes the risk zone to land, and often much of the debris is burned up upon reentry. Authorities say a police officer and a federal agent were shot and wounded in Tennessee while looking for a carjacked vehicle. Police said that a Memphis police officer and the agent with the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives were searching for the car yesterday. It had been involved in a crash when people got out of the vehicle and started firing shots at them. The recovery of America's job market hit a pause last month as many businesses, from restaurants and hotels to factories and construction companies, struggle to find enough workers to catch up with a rapidly strengthening economic rebound, employers adding just 266,000 jobs in April, sharply lower than in March, far fewer than economists had expected. Authorities say they've arrested the owner of a North California bar where made-to-order fake COVID-19 vaccination cards were being sold to undercover state agents for $20 each. Officials said Friday they're unaware of any other such cases nationwide, though bogus cards have been advertised online. Vaccination cards being used as a pass for people to attend large gatherings. Authorities in San Joaquin County had received a tip in the sheriff's office. Authorities say undercover agents with the California Department of Alcoholic Beverage Control went to the Old Corner Saloon in Clements, California, several times in April. They bought fake laminated vaccination cards. They arrested the bar's owner this week. 6:32, Michelle Murray is in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
In Alexandria, watch out for a work zone on 7 East End, westbound near 395. One lane gets by in each direction using the westbound span of King Street over 395, so just keep that in mind. Earlier road work on the outer loop at Landover Road cleared away. No delays there on the outer loop at the off-ramp to go on to 66 westbound. The right lane on that ramp is blocked due to long-term road work. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
A few scattered showers will be possible early on this morning, but we will see a little bit of sunshine breaking through midday. High temperatures today should reach the mid-60s. Some isolated showers will be possible through the afternoon hours, mainly north of D.C. Later on tonight, temperatures dip into the 40s through the region. Cool start to Mother's Day. Mother's Day, mostly cloudy skies. Some highly isolated showers, the best chance north and west. High temperatures in the mid-60s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
We've got drizzle, 43 degrees in the nation's capital, 633 on WMAL.
Just like old times, join me, Dan Bongino, live on WMAL, weekdays at noon, beginning May 24th.
It is the Saturday morning update for Mother's Day weekend. I'm Rick Fowler. Great to have you along. And we welcome Jennifer Harper, and a very happy Mother's Day to you.
Why, thank you very much. Happy Mother's Day, happy Grandmother's Day, and happy Like a Mother's Day. That goes out to everybody out there. Thanks.
What about Americans and how they're feeling about some of the new lingo and, you know, how people can be so easily offended and our ever-growing politically correct culture?
Yeah, boy, that is really out of hand right now, isn't it? And if you're wondering about this whole being careful that you offend no one at all kind of thing that we're going through right now, well, you're not alone if you've got fatigue with that. I've got this major Pew Research Center poll. Now, that's a major pollster, and they decided to find out how people feel. I'm just going to share with you what they had to say. They said only 4 in 10 Americans think people should be careful what they say to avoid offending others, with a majority, 57%, saying that people today are too easily offended by what others say. And there's a growing fatigue out there because it just goes on and on, and is amplified certainly by the news media and celebrities and politicians, and you got to wonder what the heck they're thinking. But this particular Pew Research Center poll, Rick, was called the Global Attitudes Poll. And, of course, they revealed a big ideological gap, they say. And here's some more tidbits from that. They say 65% of those on the ideological left think people should be careful to avoid offending others, compared with 1 in 4 on the right. That's a gap of 42 percentage points. Again, this is the Global Attitudes poll from Pew Research Center. And interestingly enough, they had similar findings in Britain and Germany. So if you're getting tired of all this, they're getting tired of it over in Britain and Germany also.
While we're on political correctness, cancel culture now coming for your pets?
Yes, your pets. And we're talking dogs and cats here, not parakeets and fish. But this is like a pet peeve because the climate alarmists have come for your pets, essentially. And this is a new report from Vox.com. That's a news organization. And they are now urging the public to consider offering a home to other pets besides dogs and cats. Now, why would they want to do that? Well, their report faults the diets of dogs and cats because they are mostly meat-based. That's what they say, meat-based. Anyway, this is a factor that they say contributes to global warming for all kinds of reasons. And also, they're coming down on the outdoor toileting habits of dogs. That includes the plastic poop bags that everybody gets excited about. And also cat litter boxes are coming under fire here because they're not using natural materials like wood shavings. And this is what Vox.com said. Are our pets gobbling up the planet? And they offer all kinds of ways to reduce the pet's carbon footprint. Actually, it should be the pet's carbon paw print, I should think. But anyway, moving right along. They are also citing the perils of pet waste because their annual waste is equivalent to the annual trash of 6.6 million humans. Anyway, that's what's out there. And our good friend Mark Morano, he's the founder of ClimateDepot.com. Oh, is a very interesting news site because they kind of chronicle all the climate activism and so forth. And he points out that the ecological mindset towards dogs and cats has evolved. He points out that only 4 years ago, EcoWatch.com was warning about how climate change would affect our pets. So that's something to watch for. Don't cancel your pets for the climate alarmists.
You know, here's a fun story you had in the Beltway, and I was eager to talk to you about this. And this is the UFO story, and a lot of questions. We're seeing a lot of pictures and videos and things that are supposedly UFOs. What is the Defense Department saying?
Well, certainly that has just really been on the public radar a lot because they, you know, revealed that all those tic-tac-shaped UFOs and all that sort of footage, you know, they said, yeah, well, this is from our aircraft. So anyway, that's gotten everybody thinking a great deal. But just this week, there was a memorandum released on Monday by the Department of Defense Office of Inspector General. And here's what the title is: Evaluation of DOD's Action Regarding the Unidentified Aerial Phenomenon. So this project is going to determine the extent to which the Defense Department has, quote, taken actions regarding the UAPs, or UFOs, if you're old school like me. the whole topic kind of accelerated at unheard of speeds through the news media, Rick, because it was something for them to really dig their teeth into, that this memo, they're going to have a task force to find out what's going on within DOD and evaluate their response. And they're kind of moving closer to what a lot of the UFO folks call disclosure, meaning they're going to admit to something, but who knows. But anyway, back to our media friends. The New York Post said an independent government watchdog will investigate the Pentagon's actions regarding UFOs following complaints from congressional leaders on how the Department of Defense has handled this out-of-the-world topic. And CNN advised that a government watchdog is set to examine the Pentagon's handlings of UFOs. And then we had Meritalk. That's for anybody who's in government IT. They know what publication that is. They called it Untold Mysteries, DOD IG looking at how Pentagon handles UFO, UAP sightings. And also, they said for decades, flying saucers were a punchline. Then the U.S. government got over the taboo, and that came from The New Yorker, believe it or not. And it made me think back, Rick, to December 13, 2015. What happened on that day? Well, Hillary Clinton was a presidential candidate at that time, and she was in New Hampshire. And a reporter from a local newspaper, the Conway Daily Sun, asked her what her opinions were on UFOs. Here's a direct quote from Hillary Clinton in 2015. She said, "I'm going to get to the bottom of it. I think we may already have been visited. We don't know for sure." And she said that she would assign a future task force to investigate Area 51 out there in the far southwest. And one other thing you have to remember, also on October 14th, 2020, then Deputy Secretary of Defense David L. Norquist, he approved the establishment of an Unidentified Aerial Phenomenon Task Force, UAPTF. So more of that to come. Interesting little news story, though.
You quote the Pew Research polls quite often, and they are really one of the most credible organizations when it comes to surveys and polling. What are they saying about how Americans feel about the number of immigrants arriving on the U.S. southern border?
Well, you're very right about the Pew Research Center. They're very meticulous, and I do pay attention to what they issue, and they do put out a lot of stuff. But this week, they did measure the sentiment out there towards what's going on the southern border, because it's an ongoing crisis with just a lot of people on both sides. It's not a great situation, but I'm just going to give you the straight numbers here. 75% of all U.S. adults say it is important to reduce the number of people coming to the U.S. to seek asylum. 92% of Republicans and 68% of Democrats agree with that. 77% overall say it is important to provide them safe and sanitary condition. 61% of Republicans, 91% of Democrats agree with that. And 51% overall say that providing assistance to Central America is a good idea. 40% of Republicans, 79% of Democrats agree there. And 57% overall say it should be harder for asylum seekers to be granted legal status in the United States. 78% of Republicans and 39% of Democrats agree there. And last but not least, 38% overall say that undocumented immigrants should not be allowed to stay in the country legally. That includes 51% of Republicans and 12% of Democrats. Pretty big partisan divide on that, but the most interesting number, I think, was that 79% of everybody agrees that it's important to start reducing the number of the people trying to seek asylum right now.
That's Jennifer Harper inside the Beltway. Jennifer, thank you very much. Have a wonderful Mother's Day weekend. We're at 6:44. It is the Saturday morning update. We'll talk to Jim Trusty next. But first off, Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
So far, traffic is moving well in Virginia on 95 from Dale City into Springfield, on 395 from Edsel Road to the 14th Street Bridge. In Alexandria, there is construction affecting east and westbound 7 near 395. One lane gets by in each direction using the westbound span of King Street over 395, so just keep that in mind. Also, you will find some long-term construction right now on in Bethesda on Wisconsin Avenue southbound between Woodmont Avenue and Old Georgetown Road, affecting the right lane. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
A few scattered showers will be possible early on this morning, but we will see a little bit of sunshine breaking through midday. High temperatures today should reach the mid-60s. Some isolated showers will be possible through the afternoon hours, mainly north of D.C. Later on tonight, temperatures dip into the 40s through the region. Cool start to Mother's Day. Mother's Day, mostly cloudy skies. Some highly isolated showers, the best chance north and west. High temperatures in the mid-60s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Lee at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
43 degrees, drizzle in the nation's capital. 6:45 on the Saturday morning update on WMAL.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
It's the Saturday morning update on WMAL. A happy Mother's Day weekend. And we're joined by Jim Trusty. He is the former chief of the organized crime and gang section at the U.S. Department of Justice. Now in Washington, a partner at IFRA Law. And Jim, good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me. Good morning.
Big story out of Minneapolis this week and the trial of Derek Chauvin. A photo has recently emerged online of one of the jurors in that trial, Brandon Mitchell, wearing a Black Lives Matter T-shirt, and it also had a picture surrounded by the phrase, "Get your knee off our neck." And it's prompted calls to action from the defense attorneys. And, Jim, the first thought I would have on this is wearing a BLM T-shirt would be one thing, but to have wording, "get your knees off our neck," I would think the defense attorneys would say that's very much tied to this case and Derek Chauvin.
Yeah, it is. I mean, look, the issues are kind of piling up, and we'll see some of these issues brought back to the judge before sentencing as a motion for a new trial. Others, assuming there isn't a new trial granted by the judge, they'll make their way into an appellate brief. But you put your finger right on the issue. I mean, having affinity for Black Lives Matter, that's not necessarily a problem at all, similar to other political organizations. But the fact that it kind of touches on these facts starts to raise questions. But really what it comes down to is the juror's honesty during the questioning. You know, in this case, every prospective juror filled out a 16-page questionnaire. And a lot of the questions were pretty open-ended about how they feel about police brutality, about racism. But there were some more narrow questions that are implicated by this guy, including whether they participated in any sorts of marches or protests. And that's dead center what's going on. Mr. Mitchell apparently went before the media and said, well, that was from an August protest march. So the real big issue here is going to be, is that T-shirt sign or evidence of a real contradiction in the questions and answers that were given to him before he became a juror? And so, you know, that's what's going to be the basis here. It might generate a situation where the judge is inclined to bring him into court and to either clarify or answer to the questions of why or why not some of this information didn't make its way into the questionnaire.
Now, the defense attorneys have already filed a motion for a new trial, right, before this?
Yeah, they have, and it's got a lot of different areas to it. And basically, you know, that tends to telegraph what the appeal will be based on, because most of the time you don't win the motion for a new trial. Coming from the defense perspective, some of the errors were, you know, kind of ones we've been talking about over the last few weeks, questions about the change of venue, you know, how the defense continuously thought pretrial publicity made the jury impossibly biased from the first place. And the issue of sequestration, which really heated up when Maxine Waters was running her mouth and calling for problems on the street. So that stuff's probably not going anywhere with the trial court, but it could go somewhere on appeal. I would expect that they'll either have a separate motion or they'll amend that motion for new trial and add this into the mix and perhaps seek questioning of the juror himself.
Typically, jury duty, at least when I've been summoned for jury duty, it is a not even a low-profile case. It's a no-profile case. What about a juror who gets the notice and it turns out that it will be the focus of actually the attention of world media? How does that play into a juror's psyche?
Well, I think it can play in a very destructive way for the system. And, you know, I think we've seen this over the years where high-profile trials have the potential for luring in people that have a bias, that want to be a part of something exciting, and they're going to go and lie or minimize some of their biases so they can get on the jury. I mean, I've forever been against the notion of celebrity jurors, you know, jurors that go on a TV show and sit and talk about their deliberations. And in this case, the jurors were given juror numbers, which is pretty common. And part of that is for their own protection, for their own anonymity. And so everyone's addressing them as number 16 instead of juror Mr. Fowler. So this idea that you get that protection, that we want to revere your objectivity, but then you turn around and run to the press and kind of hold court, I just think that's a really bad scenario that we're seeing increasingly in these high-profile cases. I mean, I'm waiting to see if jurors start, you know, cutting book deals to celebrate their deliberations, and it's not helpful for the system for them to have that temptation.
So we still have the trials of the other three officers involved in the death of George Floyd. A federal grand jury this week has indicted all four of the former Minneapolis police officers for violating the civil rights of George Floyd. Tell us a little bit about that indictment.
Well, there's a couple of things. I mean, DOJ civil rights, the big picture here is it seems to me the DOJ civil rights division is the favorite son under the Biden administration, much like it was under the Obama administration. You know, one thought that people always have is how can they double up on the same conduct? How can they charge for the exact same conduct? But there is this idea of what's called separate sovereigns that allow feds and states to each prosecute the same conduct without a double jeopardy issue. But there's an internal DOJ issue called the Pettit policy where you're supposed to basically have some sort of justification for doubling up with a federal prosecution on something being prosecuted in state court. Typically, that's when there's a disaster in state court. You know, the federal civil rights charges are a backup to make sure that justice is done on a powerful case or an important case. But here we've got basically preemptive federal involvement. They're not waiting to see what happens with Chauvin. They're not waiting to see what happens with the other officers. They're weighing in now with their indictment. And there's some other things that are kind of unusual about it, too, Rick. I mean, the first thing is these are not race-based violations. This is not something where they're alleging that the officers were acting upon racial animus. It's all about acting under color of law. And that's unusual, too, but it harkens back to the Rodney King situation. You know, the L.A. Police Department, a number of officers were put on trial for beating Rodney King. I think that was 1991, 1992. It's the same charges we're seeing in this federal indictment. And the big difference is not the charges, which are very similar and carry all the way up to a life sentence. But that case wasn't brought until there was an acquittal in state court. I mean, the whole point was, hey, this is unjust. We've seen the video. And the feds swooped in afterwards and indicted and prosecuted. So we're seeing a very different kind of scenario, one celebrated by the Minnesota State Attorney General. Although I think his claim that somehow this now makes perfect sense is nonsensical and maybe more political than anything else. So very serious charges coming. Still a difficult case, particularly on the other three officers, but an unusual procedural moment for the feds to weigh in early like this.
Well, there was a lot of debate about the impartiality of the jury in the Chauvin case in terms of pretrial publicity. What is the influence of this federal grand jury indictment on the impartiality of a jury in the trial of these three other officers on the state charges. I mean, what kind of a message does this send to a potential juror when they hear about this?
Yeah, it's a real increase in the amount of pressure. And you think about all the things that have happened since Chauvin's case, or during Chauvin's case, the giant civil settlement by the Minneapolis authorities, the statements of Maxine Waters, the statements of the president, which were during the sequestration of the jury, but certainly have an impact on the next round. So picking a fair jury, picking a jury that's not completely tainted by pretrial publicity, is getting harder and harder and harder as we go through this, and the federal charges won't make that any easier.
That's Jim Trusty, and of course he's a partner at IFRA Law here in Washington, and you can follow him on Twitter at Trusty Lawyer. It's 6:54. It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. It's the Saturday Morning Update. Heather Curtis has the 7 o'clock news next, and we're back with John Gizzi, Cheryl Atkison, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, and K.T. McFarland right here on WMAL.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. America's reopening. Hear it here. 105.9 FM, WMAL, a Cumulus station.